Hello, welcome back, and thank you for listening. This is WNGS Radio. I am your host, Dion DeGennaro, and I have a very special guest with me today. Sean, care to introduce yourself?
I'm Sean Spence. I'm a staff writer for Detroit City Football Club. I am the general manager for the Detroit City Clubhouse, which is a new bar and restaurant development that we're bringing to you soon. And I'm a dude who loves city. So, yeah.
Welcome, Sean.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming. Thanks for joining onto this podcast so it's just not me talking into the void.
You know, I enjoy you talking into the void, though. So
I do it quite a bit. Sean, we're just going to get the ball rolling. We're going to jump right in.
Okay.
Tell everyone how you first got introduced to DCFC.
Okay, well, I have been soccer afflicted, I would say, since the mid-90s, and always have been a person who writes. Starting around 2008, I started writing about the Chicago Fire. I live in Flint. I watch a lot of football. The Fire were the closest team to me, and I grew up in Northern Indiana, so you kind of default follow Chicago sports.
Yeah,
so like
exactly.
Bears, Bulls, yeah. Cubs, okay.
Like the west side of Michigan too.
Right. And so, you know, Chicago got a team. I was moving to Texas while they were coming up, so I really didn't get a chance to see them. But I moved back up here and started following the team, and they seemed like they had a lot of authenticity at that point.
Yeah.
Section 8.
When they first started, absolutely.
Yeah, Section 8 was kind of one of the leaders of, you know, kind of real
supporter culture
engagement.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So I started writing about the team from in various places. The Offside was theoffside.com, which I don't think exists anymore.
I don't think it does either.
But I followed a guy named Tom Dunmore there who wound up working for Indy 11, working with Peter Wilt, who's the guy who founded the Chicago Fire. I kind of got hooked up with some people who knew the Fire, and just in time for it to be purchased by, you know, a guy named Andrew Hauptman, who's, you know, a program investor, and for it to all kind of come undone.
Mm-hmm.
And so then in later years, as kind of contiguous with City, I was the editor of Hot Time in the Old Town, which is an SB Nation blog about the Fire. I kept writing about the Fire. I wrote a few things for them. They needed a boss. I said, I'll boss people around. I was running that when City, I think in their third year,
2014.
Right. They were drawn against a club called RWB Adria out of Chicago, which is a Croatian league team.
Been there forever.
Right. Been there forever. Been there, like, you know, since the 50s. They were a really cool story. And
yeah.
Really, really great guys. And that was how I came to go to the City game that, you know, resulted in the title of the story is Football's Human Face, but it's mostly famous for the poll quote, which is that Northern Guard is where family for any entertainment got, you know, curb stomped or something. I can't remember.
Curb stomped by a biker gang,
right,
and left,
you know,
to die.
Right, exactly. You know, so, but kind of like, oh, he got this. But
yeah, oh, he gets us.
Yeah, for me, like coming into that, I had no idea what I was going to see.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'd heard, you know.
I was going to ask, so did our reputation precede us?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. What I heard from Chicago people was that, like, I hear those people are assholes. Which, you know, fair enough.
Okay.
You know, they're loud and they're, you know, and so, I mean, I'm like, okay, well, that's interesting. So I went down there with my wife, which I think was important because a lot of times when I do remote things, it's just me. And I was down there, I was on the field. So, I mean, I'm kind of getting the vibe that's happening.
Yeah.
And clearly, you know, that evening, Northern Guard kind of kept filling in and kept filling in. And by the end there, you know, it's like, wow, there's 500-600 people here.
Yeah.
in Livonia.
That was a shitty night,
it
too.
Was, yeah, it was like...
cold and rainy and early Michigan spring.
Right, right.
It was like right after work, and it was in Livonia.
Right.
People filling in.
Those variables, I had no idea that this was like a less than ideal situation for the guard, because, I mean, NGS really just came in and did their thing. Like, all right, here's our fucking flags. We're going to sing some songs now. We're going to make fun of you. And then the intensity of the people on the fence line. Ken was on the fence line for that game. I think there's one... Ken is one of the guys that I'm quoting when I'm sort of quoting the guys on the fence in that story, yeah, who were like telling like the official, like, maybe he shouldn't be alive, things like that.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it really,
I was standing right
it
next
really
to Ken.
It was an angry game.
He got a player red carded.
Yeah. Ken got a player so wound up that he
lost his cool. Yeah. And
I mean, it really, that game in extra time turned into just a barely controlled, like, leg-breaking exhibition. Like,
it was insane.
The teams were angry with each other, and
supporters fueled the fire on the pitch.
The supporters were you know, a visceral part of it. And having been around a lot of soccer in America, you don't, like, that feedback loop is so much a part of what makes the game what it is, and so not present
in the game
The game here.
Yeah,
that, you know. And it feels normal to us now.
Yeah, I was going to say.
But that's what, I think that's what people respond to. I've got an essay that I'm like 1,200 words into that's called Empathy is the Engine. And it talks about my experience there and how, like, Sarah, who's a very empathetic person, experienced that kind of in Technicolor. Like, she, like, all of these feelings coming off of these people, like, it draws you in.
From that particular game?
From that particular game. Just, you know, 500 people kind of together, like, so palpably wanting this thing is, you know, for a person like Sarah, who's very empathetic, being in public is a really, like, shitty roll of the dice. Because generally, people, when they're in public, are more fractious. They're kind of, you just kind of, all that kind of gripey mumbling that you hear when you're in a crowd is like soaking into her. You know?
Oh, wow.
What the fuck is this?
She absorbs, like, everything.
Right.
Okay.
So then to have be surrounded by hundreds of people who are all like ecstatic at the same thing is completely unique. Like, you know, not.
And everyone's locked in.
Right, right. And like more so than you get in really anything else. Like, it's like if you were in a it's like maybe if you were at a jazz concert.
Yeah, and everyone's
where, like, your feelings
chilling
are being kind of reflected by the sounds
by
they're making.
And stuff, yeah.
Like, that's, you know.
That's actually a really interesting way to put it.
And, you know, and it happens all the time in soccer. Like, we just take it for granted that in football, like, if you've got enough of a vibe going, that it's gonna mess with people one way or the other.
Yeah.
You know, so coming away from that, like, I mean, the thing I remember about it is driving home, Sarah being like, okay, we need to find out when they're playing again and get down there, because that's
something
was
special.
Right.
That night was a very interesting first game.
Yeah.
For sure. But I think you bring up a point that I've never really heard anyone talk about before, where that's like one of the things that makes the game days what they are, is just the like, you leave almost feeling exhausted,
right?
Because you've experienced not just physical and mental, like, activity, but, like, you definitely, like, the emotions that you feel and, like, the collective emotions that you feel drain you.
Right. Absolutely. One, I've described it a few times in stories. Like, I just kind of, like, glide past it and hope that you can kind of figure what I'm saying, but I call it raising a cone of power, which is like a pagan witchy concept.
Okay.
Right?
We're gonna
do this spell, we're gonna raise this cone of power. I mean, you know, whatever.
No,
but it seems
totally
apply. You know, the sort of participation in this sporting
energy
ritual,
yeah,
and like
energy,
the energy exchange, right? The way that, you know, the way that our, like, personal sort of feelings blend in with everyone else's feelings and motivate these guys that are out there that you can't touch, is kind of remarkable.
And that game was a perfect example of it. Yeah. So, writing.
Okay.
Did you have wrote your whole life, or did you start writing for football? Or?
No, I've written my whole life, much less than I should, you know? I mean, I am like, lazy, basically. And so, you know, I've always been able to kind of make special things happen when I'm putting words together. But I'm lazy, so I haven't done as much of it as I should. And, you know, it's one of those things that, like, I understand that there are people who are more disciplined than me who, like, make writing their vocation and, like, sit down. And, you know, for me, I'll kind of not find inspiration and be like, eh, all right.
Yeah.
You know,
I don't need to force this one.
Right. And you know, I mean, really, if I was going to at any point make real money writing, I need to be like...
All in.
Right. And I'm just not.
Okay.
You know...
So what got you into writing about football?
Okay. Well, okay, so...
This is a totally improvised question.
Yeah, I'm going to go way back here.
Okay.
1997 was a weird year for me. My first marriage ended, and I found all these things that I have later, that have like kind of defined my life going forward. So
redefined.
So I got my first Radiohead album.
big moment.
Radiohead and Ani DeFranco were like, I got them on the same trip to Borders. I got OK Computer and Living in Clip. And those are, like, my two favorite artists. Yeah. Like, and I found them on the same day.
Yeah.
And then, like, 2 weeks after that, I was in a message board, like, you know, being into soccer. And some dork was posting about Championship Manager. It was Championship Manager 2 at that point. Okay. So this is, if you don't know, this is the kind of precursor to Football Managers. We're talking about 21 years ago. This person's like, this is the greatest soccer game ever. And like, it was somebody who was posting that in every forum.
Yeah. Right? Oh, God.
You know, okay. But at the same time,
an advocate.
I'm working a marketing job at this point for a Midwest like healthcare consortium. So, you know, I've got some time. And like, I'm going to be here running these cell phone bills till 8. So I'm going to download this game. I actually downloaded it on my work computer. And it was a game people make fun of that game now because it's spreadsheets, right?
Yeah.
I mean, now this is 1997.
No graphic interface.
It's straight spreadsheets. Like, you know, you pull up a player and it's just a spreadsheet of their technical, mental, and physical abilities. But then as you start clicking through that, I don't know if I could have arrived at a better understanding of the difference between an open system and the system we have than Championship Manager or Football Manager.
Yeah.
Like, because I had to find it on my own, you kind of like,
come to your own conclusion. Yeah, like, well, holy shit, why would anyone do it this other way?
Right. I'm like, my first thing, I was like, honestly, the first team I ever managed was Huddersfield.
Okay.
Because, you know,
funny.
You're like looking at these English league names and it's like, what the fuck? Grimsby Town.
Portsmouth.
Yeah, Portsmouth. Huddersfield just sounded hilarious to me. And I think they were in the third division, which is now League One.
Okay.
It was called something else then.
Yeah.
And so I was like, okay, you know, I didn't really know what that meant. Like, okay, their players don't make that much money.
Yeah.
I actually bought the game at some point because you'd only play 6 months on the demo.
That's a great demo.
Yeah, exactly. It was great. But I did it like 4 times. And I was like, oh, okay, I want to...
Different computer.
Right.
Yeah.
So I didn't know that promotion and relegation was a thing. Like,
okay.
I still didn't know.
Yeah, I guess if you don't have any exposure to that, like, why would you know that?
Right. I started the game. We had, and then I'm playing my first season with Huddersfield. We're like in the playoff places.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking it's the playoffs, like it's American soccer,
okay,
like
you know, this is trophy.
Good. And you know, so we won a match and won another match. I think that was it. I think it was like top two go up, and then the next four are in the playoffs or something.
Yeah, yeah.
So we won a couple playoff matches, and they're like, okay, time to start the next year, you know. And like, all of a sudden, our budget is way
huge.
Bigger. Like, what happened? I'm in the championship.
Okay, he moved up.
Oh, like, oh my god. Like,
there's so many levels to this.
Yeah, and I mean, really,
anything could happen.
I really learned about world football from that game. Because there was no similarly granular tutorial in English that you can read anywhere. Now, maybe there's something now, but 20 years ago, there's nothing.
Yeah, I can't imagine.
Like, nothing. For an American.
Unless you, unless you knew where you needed to look. You had to be looking for it.
You know, I mean, 97, 98, you're talking about, like, message boards. The internet was totally different. There weren't blogs yet.
Yeah, it was like VB boards.
Right. So, yeah, lots of virtual bulletin boards.
Yeah.
And that's where, you know, I kind of sussed these things out. Big Soccer came around that time. Now, you know, like all message boards, it's gone on to be kind of a right-wing cesspool. What are you going to do?
What are you going to do?
But, you know, back then it was the only place where you could get...
Communicate with people from everywhere.
And there were other things. There was a thing called Match Night that was run out of Columbus.
Okay. I've never heard of that.
I think it, you know, it lasted like 4 or 5 years.
Okay.
But like 2000 to 2005... If you wanted to see any American soccer, you had to go there. And, you know, all those, rest in peace, every version of the old internet.
Yeah.
but that's how I came to understand
the game.
The game and the difference in structure and what difference in structure can mean.
Yeah.
Kind of on my own before any conversations with any other nerds. Yeah. You know what I mean? like fast forward to say 2014, it was when I was working for the fire, but I had these ideas in my head, right? And then I run into the city here exemplifying this thing that, you know, I've imagined in America but never
dreamt
seen
about.
Right. No, for seriously, you know, at that point I'm 17 years into this, like, into, you know, getting the database manager and making Flint a team, and like, and then buying and like downloading some sort of patch that allows you to do relegation and promotion in America,
in the US. Yeah.
And you know, I kind of, you know, what is it? Is it jamais vu? Is it something I've never seen before? Like, oh, this is something I've anticipated but never seen. I had that feeling, like, ooh.
Yeah.
So then I didn't really see a way forward writing about City at that point. You know, I mean, it's a short season.
It was a niche thing, short season.
Right. And one of the weird things about covering football is that, you know, there's a lot to know. And you kind of need to know if you're going to write about it in any intelligent way, other than just like, you know, in the 13th minute, so-and-so scored.
Breaking it down to its most simple.
Right. So I didn't see that kind of stuff was available. And I kept writing for Hot Time. I kept kind of running things for them. As the Chicago Fire have kind of just been that jalopy going down the road, just tossing off parts and gradually falling to pieces. And, I, you know, I went for a while documenting that. And got blackballed, you know, by MLS. And maybe U.S. Soccer. Yeah. I was doing some U.S. Open Cup reporting for U.S. Soccer.
Yeah.
Not the City game, but other games.
Regionally.
Right. Someone from the Fire front office reached out to them and said, we don't feel like it's appropriate for this guy. You know, because
you're talking shit.
You
called it like it was.
Right. You know, I just said, hey, you know, guy who owns the Fire. I called Andrew Hout by my name a lot.
Yeah.
You know, I called him Little Lord Fauntleroy and just made fun of him for being just rich and clueless, which is, you know, I mean, just the lowest hanging fruit on this guy.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
I mean, and he took it really personally, and, you know, like, I am on the list, not supposed to go into Toyota Stadium anymore, although they don't really check.
Yeah,
you know,
check.
If I show up with a ticket, I can get in.
Yeah.
But I don't get in for free. I don't get to go to the press scrum. I don't get any stats from the team. They don't respond to me. Whatever. That was the last, like, couple years that I was writing about the team. I was completely, like...
Blackballed.
And, you know...
Opinion pieces.
Right. You know, kind of... Well, you know... To cover a game, I don't need to know what the coach has to say about it. Who gives a shit? I just watched the fucking thing. like, you don't trust the evidence of your senses sufficient to write that story. Yeah. You're just not in this business, really, to me. So, you know, I never was one of those guys who's all hanging on the quotes. Like, I got better things to say than they do.
Well, yeah, that's the one thing about, I think, your pieces that I really like, is it's your take on what happened.
Yeah, you know, I feel like Okay, when I first got out of college, like 1992, if anybody wants to know how old I am.
Do the math.
I had no job. I was, living in my parents' basement. I'm like the assistant coach for a girls' volleyball team. Like, I don't know, you need some coaching done? I could figure it out. I didn't know anything about volleyball. I knew a lot about basketball, but there wasn't any basketball positions available, so volleyball, whatever.
Made it work.
Yeah, and this local paper advertised for stringers. I applied, and like 6 months later, I was like on stage winning a Mark Twain Award. Like, yay! like, so it really went fast.
Yeah, you were all in, man.
But I think
you learned volleyball really fast.
Well, yeah. I think that the reason that it went quickly is just because I don't like who can possibly care about the outcome of a particular game or whatever. Like, there is a certain realism you need to bring to the table. This is optional shit here. We're reporting, but it's not reporting, right? It's not crucial that I maintain neutrality.
Yeah.
Because I'm not covering the local city board or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm watching a game. And so for me, like
that. You're putting your voice into it.
Well, because of the sort of triviality of the objective reality you're describing, you can take more license with it,
right?
Yeah,
exactly.
And so I wouldn't get facts wrong, but I just, to the extent that the facts were important, I'd get them right. But are they important? Are they really important? How did it feel? What was it like?
Yeah.
What was it like to be there?
What was the story?
Right. What happened? Okay, you're covering a girls' high school basketball game, but what's their feeling going into this? There's more to it than just the basketball.
There's an underlying narrative.
Right.
Exactly.
There's this girl who's a power forward who's got a bad knee, and she's a junior, so she really needs to produce this year, or the scholarships aren't coming, so the pressure's on her, and her parents are here early watching her warm up. How much pressure is that on her? That's the things I would go into the situation and watch.
Yeah.
Just kind of, stay in the background. And just watch people.
Yeah.
It worked out. I'm enough of a narcissist dork that I think of it as art, right?
And writing.
And yeah. Well, and like writing
or like
about
watching people.
Writing about sports.
Okay.
Specifically, yeah, I think it's kind of it's an art that not a lot of people really think of it as art. Mm-hmm.
I think there's art in everything.
Well,
to be honest.
Yeah. And I think most people approach writing about sports as a craft. And I think that all art is a craft. Obviously, there's craft involved. But
there's
a craft.
A formula.
Right.
And you have to do it
right,
this
exactly.
way.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. I'm not going to do a lead for you. But yeah. and I just kind of hate that stuff.
Yeah. That's how I felt about, sports photography. Actually, going into myself shooting City was I would see, you'd go on a blog or a message board and you would see game photos and there's 80 photos and I don't really give a shit about anything that's happening in any
it's
of
a dude,
them because
you're trying to trap a ball.
Yeah. And that does nothing.
Right.
And I derive no feeling from that. And so I wanted to almost take a dramatic approach to shooting photos and trying to tell a story, or at least my interpretation of the story of what was happening.
Okay.
In the supporter section, on the field,
right.
Pre-games,
the
vibes.
The terroir is what I call it. Like, it's the, the environment that this bloomed in.
Interesting. So I'm not a writer at all. I'm a horrible writer. But the way you just described that, I totally get what you're saying.
Right.
For when you're shooting sports photos for a newspaper, you're just get an action photo. Who gives a shit?
Is that the goal scorer?
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. But to me, there's no fun in that. I don't enjoy doing something that. I like more interpreting how I perceive the story of the game and putting it into images.
I would say that I was very, very lucky. Both with City and in my initial job for the Logan Sport Pharaohs Tribune in Indiana, to land with people who kind of identified in me as someone who's had some talent, and then to give me a lot of latitude,
let you
do my
it.
Thing.
Yeah.
And you know, I think about the people I worked with in Logansport, you know, 25 years ago. And, I still remember all their names, Andy LaValle, if you're listening to this, you are one of the best sports photographers I've ever worked with. You are amazing. I think he lives in in the region somewhere.
Okay.
Gary,
okay.
That area.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
But you know,
probably does like NFL games.
We had a group of people who I think kind of saw what I was trying to do and like got on board with it. And, so it was, you know, we had a good section for a while there.
Yeah.
With City,
yeah, so how did you get the job for City?
Okay,
so to make this all relevant.
Right, yeah. Wow.
How did you get the job with City?
Time to wake up, people.
You were a supporter.
We became season ticket holders right away, you know, 2015. Like, we went to 2014. We went to maybe one or two games for the rest of the season after the Open Cup game. I saw the WMB goal from midfield and that crazy Sean Lawson, Erie goal.
Yep. Left people in their boots.
Yeah. And so 2015, 2016, we're season ticket holders. Supporter. We're in NGS. You can see pictures of me, like, with my shirt off at the end of the FC United Manchester game.
Yeah.
I'm writing about the Fire, all the time, and running this website, and like there are times where they're playing kind of close to each other, and I'm having to manage all that, mm-hmm. or like, you know, I'm going to City games and experiencing this game, and then driving home and like watching the condensed replay to just shit something out for the Fire, like really giving short shrift to the Chicago thing, and it did result in some interesting stories, just because you know
anytime you're in a weird situation, yeah.
But I was kind of, there wasn't anything or any writing around the club that I, this one of the unique things about Detroit City is that the branding, the merch, like everything around the club has you know, been highly professional.
Yeah. That's something we always say. They've taken it seriously from day one.
Right. And it makes a big difference.
Absolutely. It's a huge difference. And people take you seriously.
Yeah. And I really felt like, okay, the writing is something that I could help them with. You know, I could bring the writing up where some of the other stuff is.
Yeah.
But I hate looking for work. I hate asking people for things. I just hate it. Like, I can't, like, I think it's just like I'm just like, you know, a narcissist.
Predisposed.
Can't handle criticism or whatever. So, like, you know, putting myself out there and saying, what do you think? Like, I just hate that. So, what I did was, Dean Padre had
been on this podcast.
Right. Dean had a website he was putting together that he was thinking was going to be a community thing. Like, mm-hmm. we're going to have you know, maybe a podcast there, and we're going to have some other stuff. And I was like, you know, I'd like to,
just can't get enough.
Just can't get enough. Yeah. Just can't get enough .city. Because all the stuff I wrote in 2017 is still there.
Yeah.
I just hit him up like, hey, you know, thinking of doing some writing about City. What do you think? And, you know, I mean, I was an established writer. So he's like, yeah, okay, sure. Here's the login.
Whatever.
Go.
Yeah, go.
You know? And I really wrote things last year. I mean, because I was still like the editor in chief of Hot Time, I was, you know, a lot of, especially like away days, when we like play Friday night and have an away day, I could never make it.
Yeah.
So I was doing like kind of wrap up essays, like, okay, mm-hmm. here's what happened this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
But really, you know, my motive was that someone in the front office who is in charge of content would be like, wow,
the long game.
Right. That's more like, the other thing is I wanted, like, you know, I'm old. Okay. And, I'll be 50 this year.
Old.
I know. So, and I've just had no
crusty.
I have no patience for like coming in and getting handed a bunch of like, you know, here's what we want you to do. Yeah. Like, I didn't want that.
Yeah.
You know, I wanted them to kind of come to me and be like, we want you to do what you do.
Yeah.
So I just did it in front of them for the whole season. Like, here's this.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, And I thought it was going to work about halfway through the season. Like when a couple of the owners started like liking my Facebook posts with those things, like, okay.
No, they're reading it.
Like, okay, come and get me.
And then, hands rubbing together.
Right. And then the season ended and the fire season ended and I was trying to decide where to go. And I mean, I had a lot of options. And the Athletic was one of them. And I really, like,
they're getting everyone. They're getting everyone.
Oh, they're great. Yeah. I've got nothing bad to say about the Athletic.
Everything I've read that all of their writers have put out, it's been great.
Right. Obviously, I mean, if I had been doing the work, then maybe James wouldn't have got involved. And I'm glad James is involved.
Because he did a great job,
right,
too.
So, it turned out great. Yeah. The money was, I mean, the thing about the Athletic to realize is that this is a VC thing, right? Mm-hmm. The money is good.
Mm-hmm.
That's how they're getting it. If you're like, wow, I've heard of that guy.
Who the fuck's paying for all of this?
Yeah, there's someone from San Francisco, is paying the bills.
Yeah.
So subscribe if you like it, because that money will run out eventually, and they need to be sustainable.
I did. It's worth it. Totally worth it.
Like, I got into it, and I was working on a piece about where Detroit City stands and what they're...
Yeah.
And...
So this is for the Athletic?
This is for the Athletic.
Okay.
And I think I interviewed you. I interviewed a couple people.
Oh, I think I maybe remember that.
This was, you know, last November or so. Something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really excited to work with an editor. I mean, I haven't been, you know, I've been a one-man band for years, you know, just kind of like... Seems right. Yeah. Send it. You know, okay.
So what's the worst that can happen?
Yeah, exactly. I could be fired and blackballed and never work again. Okay, it's fine.
Yeah.
So I just realized, like, I kind of don't have patience for that anymore. Like, okay, I've kind of moved off of being a journalist and I'm more just a writer.
Yeah.
And I did not want that much feedback. I didn't want that much back and forth. Like, you know, I loved it when I was 25, but now I'm 50 and I'm kind of like, look, you know, I've watched a lot. And you know, it may have been different if it was after the soccer vertical was launched, because mm-hmm. I was having to educate people about soccer specific stuff. That was just like,
I don't have fucking time for this shit.
Well, you know, and they, you know, and it's a natural, you're a Detroit editor, you're trying to tie it into the MLS thing. I'm like, no. Like, let me explain how fucked that is.
Yeah.
And okay, well, then she wants me to go back and explain how fucked it is in the story. And I'm just like, okay.
You got a 5,000 word piece here?
Right, exactly. Holy, I was just kind of like, hey. And so I was kind of like, all right, maybe not the Athletic. The money
was
great.
This was November.
Right. And I was, you know, what am I going to do? Okay, I'm still running hot time.
Yeah.
I want somewhere to write about City. I finally just, Midfield Press got a hold of me. Mm-hmm. Chris was
I forwarded them. Forwarded
yeah,
them to
yeah.
You.
Chris was like, hey, I hear you're not, you know, and I'm like, well, I'm probably going to do my stuff for Dean's Place again. But if you guys want to cross post it, you know, I'm good with that. And that was the plan until Alex Wright wrote me, like, I think middle of March. You know, tryouts were coming up.
Yeah, late.
And he was like, what do you think, you know?
Yeah.
I was like, you know, well, yes, this is the one thing that I'm just going to absolutely say yes to. You want me to produce the official story? I will do that. So, you know, I did a couple essays beforehand, like, about tryouts and about soccer prom. And I think that gave him a little bit of confidence that they could just kind of turn me loose. And I mean, that's pretty much this season. I just wandered around on my own, you know,
and meandered around,
you know,
blended in,
got to know Klaus a bit and, you know, everybody up in the press box. And, you know, gradually got to understand, you know, how Ben is and, you know, a few of the players, you know, what they're kind of like and what they're into.
It's tough because it's just such a short time.
It is tough. It's a little different than like a regular beat gig. Yeah. Because it's not game after game after game for months and months and months. And a regular beat gig, like, you get to know the players like they're, you know, kind of half friends of yours.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, they're not friends cause you might have to shit on them at some point.
Exactly.
They understand that.
Yeah.
You understand that. But at the same time, you get friendly, you know, each other, you know that guy doesn't like chicken or whatever.
Yeah.
So, you know, I didn't get any of that this year, but I didn't really want it. You know, I really
wasn't really relevant.
Well, and I like I said, I want to approach the it's not just about the players and what they're feeling. Yeah. You know, it's about the fans and what they're feeling, the supporters, the people, all these people, like the whole, you know, every person.
Macro.
Every person brings their own thread, and that thread, the cool thing about sports, unlike every other thing in your world, is that there's a finite beginning and an ending, and we have some conclusion.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's like episodic TV.
Yeah.
You know that at the end of the episode, something's going to have happened. Now, maybe it's a draw, but, you know, somebody's hurt, somebody's happy, somebody whatever. You know that the sort of the axis of story will turn.
Yeah.
Where, you know, if you're covering a city council meeting, who knows? They might just continue everything you're interested in and call it a day, and then you've got to write a story about that.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Cool. So that's how you got involved?
Yes. That's how I got involved. I wrote a bunch of stories, and then they asked me to come on.
Simple enough.
I guess. I don't think it's replicable, really, but good luck.
Who knows,
if
man?
Yeah. Just don't do it for city, because I've already done
that. Yeah, I know. That one's worn out.
I've burned that bridge.
Yeah. So now the natural segue is going to be your promotion, so to speak, from staff writer to GM of, God, its official name today. The official name is?
Detroit City Clubhouse.
Detroit City Clubhouse.
It'll basically be branded City Clubhouse.
City Clubhouse, okay.
On our invoices it says Detroit City Clubhouse.
DCB, or DCC.
DCC, yeah.
How did that happen?
Well,
from your perspective, because the owner's perspective obviously is very different. So how did you end up getting involved in becoming a GM of a restaurant?
Well, write and don't pay the bills. You know what I'm saying? it could pay the bills if I was more diligent and less devoted to art, right?
Yeah.
But it does not. So I've worked at the Olive Garden. Since 2002.
Okay.
And really, you know, got into the restaurant business.
Yeah.
At first it was just, you know, I mean, I moved up here with an IT job, and that company kind of like went away as I was moving. So kind of like, whoa, okay. I had to find my feet really quickly.
Yeah.
The Olive Garden was the first place that called me back. You know, like, I got bills to pay.
Yeah.
So I learned to wait. I mean, I'd waited tables some before, but I kind of learned their system, and then, you know, I'm a curious person. I just kind of learned more about the business and more about the business. I got kind of trained to be a manager for them.
Mm-hmm.
And in the process of being trained, my opinions about things came out. So quickly became clear that I was not who they were looking for in the structure of Darden restaurants. You know, I mean,
especially something like Olive Garden.
Well, I'm a socialist, and that has real impacts on the way I think about work.
Yeah.
Primarily that I just don't feel like because we're given some, you know, stricture or task that we owe it to everyone in our lives to immediately apply that.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, I maintain my willingness to criticize stupid ideas stridently.
That's like the nicest way to put that.
Just not like, you know, I think when I was 22, I was probably pretty rough. Like when I was a journalist.
Yeah.
Like I was like a suffer no fools guy. Like, you know, if you came to me, like if we were doing a feature together and you were the artist and you brought me some photography that I thought was shit, I'd just be like, you know, this is not good enough. Like you need to try over. Like this is so bad.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, I'm old enough now that I know maybe you don't do that.
That's
so
not
much.
The way to approach that.
Right.
Yeah,
But still I would, you know, I've still found myself weekly going like, this idea is not just wrong, but it's fucked. And like, you need to just not do this.
Yeah.
And you know, that's no way to get promoted.
So I didn't
get promoted.
Yeah.
What I did was just kind of lay in the weeds and a professional depression and like try to learn as much as I could and, wait for an opportunity.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I found several opportunities in writing, and I had kind of at that point really told myself that this is the division of my life. I'm going to have a creatively satisfying but professionally bullshit life.
Yeah.
Okay, whatever.
So
I can live with that.
A lot of people do that.
Right.
Like, that's not
unusual.
Know,
like, yeah, exactly. You know, I'm going to. And then, you know, the guy started talking about the field house, the owners started talking about the field house, and started talking about what they were hoping, like they're going to open a restaurant. And of course, my ears went, oh, you're going to open a restaurant? Really? Like, a city restaurant? Okay. You know, I've been thinking about how restaurants should be run for a decade and a half now. That's an interesting idea.
You've got a lot of experience, yeah.
Right. So I actually put myself out there this time and applied.
Yeah.
And didn't just, like, hope to wait tables in front of them for 10 years until they noticed me.
Yeah, right. A little bit different.
And, you know, I was sure that I was the least qualified person applying. Like, well, I'm just going to...
See what happens.
Good luck, you know.
See what happens.
And I went through a couple interviews. I did a phone interview with Sean Mann at a McDonald's in Metamora, which I wrongly thought I was, like, kind of driving between things I had to do. And I was like, well, oh, Metamora McDonald's, this will be quiet. And I went in there, and there's, like, every old guy in Metamora currently, like, fighting each other over a Domino's tournament.
That's so good.
So I was like, and then Sean called right then. So I'm like, hey, I'm going to go out to my car just a second. He's like, where are you? Yeah, Domino's. Long story short, I got the job. It's going to be a super exciting place. Obviously, the field, like, there's two layers to this. Field house is the larger thing.
Facility.
If y'all don't know, the entire facility is called the field house, and then the clubhouse is the bar restaurant that's kind of perched atop the two,
which is super cool.
The field house, yeah. The field house is actually two field houses that are side by side. When you drive into the property, you drive under the restaurant. It was formerly, like, Lawrence Tech, I think, and Wayne State Hockey.
Yep.
But they both canceled their programs, and it's laid fallow for, like, 4 years.
Yeah. Empty and...
Right. So we are in the process of revitalizing the whole thing, converting the fields to soccer fields. One of the hockey rinks is actually... There's going to be, like, an MISL-style indoor...
Is that, do you know if that's Olympic sized or
I don't know.
NHL sized?
I don't know. Okay. But I know that, we've got turf in the hockey field now. And turf on the other side. And we're, putting up walls and putting in kitchen equipment, like we're building a restaurant from scratch. We are slated to open October 1st, and we remain hopeful that will be possible.
There's photos of the bar that dropped today.
Yeah. I think the first photo was the one I took because I wasn't sure if Lindsay was going to come over. So I was like, hey, here's a bar photo. The guy was putting the polyurethane coat on it today. It looks nice. And we'll have the merch there. The offices will be there.
They're moving the store there.
I mean, the first team will have a clubhouse or like a training room.
Yeah.
I think we're going to have a video room for them. Cool. So this is part of the growth of the Detroit City Football Club as a club.
Yeah.
If you look at, people talk about promotional relegation, right?
Yeah.
I mean, this is what it is. Like, that's the thing that
you're building.
When people
facilities.
Talk about promotion and relegation, they're like, oh, socialism. Like, well, no, this is a capitalist system.
Exactly. It's the most free market you can get.
What you're doing is growing the economy around the team.
Exactly.
Such that you can afford more expensive players.
Exactly.
And better stuff. With City, right now I'm in the process of recruiting staff. So if you're a restaurant worker, if you're a cook or you're a bartender in the Detroit area and you think this sounds awesome, my name is Sean Spence. I'm the general manager at City Clubhouse. My phone number is 810-835-2987. You can call me and I will set up an interview with you because we need good people. We've got quite a few set up, but we can always use more good people.
Absolutely.
And the cool thing is that this is going to be... this is a City branded. This is a City, not just a City branded thing, but we run like a City thing. I'm the general manager. Yeah. I'm in charge of it.
Very community oriented. It's going to be the same ideals of the club,
right.
But run as a different type of business.
Right. Exactly. Well, I mean, one thing I tell please understand. If you are a person who is connected to the owners of Detroit City Football Club, or you are one of those owners, that I speak to potential coworkers in a way that, you may find slightly interesting. For example, I tell people when I'm interviewing them that, let's imagine that where you're working right now, it goes super well. What's the upside for you? Like, you get to keep your job, right? Maybe you get more hours.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, you know that that what's really happening is some asshole somewhere is making that money.
You right? say this in the interview.
Yeah, yeah. Because I think it's important to acknowledge.
Yeah, keep it real.
That, you know, we're talking about rich assholes ruining the world here. So yeah. We're trying to avoid that outcome. And, you know, I because I'm not interviewing rich people, it goes fairly well. You know, that's I mean, it's important.
Yeah.
The fundamentals
people need
tell.
To understand that when what they're getting involved with
right.
up front. Like, this is not a typical situation.
Right. Well, it's part of the one of the conversations you get into around, like, promotion and relegation in the United States is people will say, well, who gives a shit? You know,
yeah.
I like to watch the soccer. Why? Who cares? You know, like, well, OK, the fundamentals matter and they will tell eventually. So, you know, if the Chicago Fire were a club, a real club and not an MLS franchise, the way they are treating their supporters right now, the way they're the fact that they've kicked all of the Latino supporters out and that Section 8 has just said, okay, fuck you, we're leaving.
Yeah, exactly.
That would, like, they would be, every alarm should be going off in that office. Like, you're going the wrong way. Yeah. But they're just like, brother.
Business as usual.
They don't give a shit.
It doesn't matter.
Right.
It doesn't matter. It does not really hurt their bottom line.
Right.
So why change what they're doing?
Yeah, you already bought your tickets. We don't care.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, we're just going to move the franchise somewhere that wants soccer as soon as these people are tired of giving us money.
Yeah.
So what I'm saying is that fundamentals matter.
Yeah.
And that the fundamentals of this, of the clubhouse and the field house are the same fundamentals for the club, which is that we, you know, the profits go to charity and that, you know, those charities profit thereby.
Yeah.
Specifically, the Detroit Police Athletic League Select group that is our, essentially our nascent academy.
Yeah.
Are, you know, like just from the alcohol sales basically this year, we've been able to fund it. So it's virtually free as compared to a similar pay to play. You're talking about 1/15 the cost of a suburban travel team.
Yeah. 1/15.
And less than that if you really can't afford it.
Yeah.
You know, if a kid who's got talent comes to our coaches and says, $300 is a deal breaker for us in a year, like, okay, well, we'll find a way to make that work.
Yeah.
And that's how the clubhouse is going to be. That's how every business attached to the city will be.
Yeah.
We will always be here serving the community of Detroit. You're never going to have to wonder where our hearts are. You know, like, we show you with the money.
the money and the actions of the club. And
right.
All. Yeah.
So, you know, it's very, very exciting. Now, I do want to say that I've read lots of, like, menu speculation online, and everybody just relax.
Just chill the fuck out.
It's gonna be fine. Like, yeah. Are we gonna have your favorite stuff? I don't know. Maybe we'll have some stuff you'll like.
Yeah.
The food is gonna be delicious. It's gonna be simple, and we're not gonna serve you at a table. Like Little Lord Fauntleroy. I'm sorry. When you come in here, you're like, you're joining the party. You're not, like, being waited on. So, you know, if you like being part of the party, then we're going to be open 7 days a week.
Come party with us.
Exactly. I think it's going to be an exciting space.
Yeah.
Some of the memorabilia we've got lined up for the, like, Sean Grogan did a bunch of research, and there's going to be, like, Detroit soccer history on the walls.
Awesome. Like a mini museum.
Yeah.
Sort of thing.
Yeah. Well, and all of Vito's helmets.
I saw those sitting in the club shop.
Yeah. Like, so if you guys know Vito Malish, he's a professor who just moved to Florida. So sorry, buddy. But he's also a miniatures gamer. He did these awesome new helmets every year, and he turned them all in, and they're going to be on display at the clubhouse.
That's awesome.
So yeah, your first beer's on me.
Woo-hoo!
Thanks. But only your first one. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Got a business to run here.
Exactly. It's very exciting. It is super weird to transition from being a complete outsider who's just watching this and thinking it's great, to being all,
you have a hand in it now.
All the way inside, right? And I think that the normal progression in that case is toward disillusionment, right?
Yeah.
And that's that's in the essay that I said I haven't finished yet. I was kind of like, what's the opposite of disillusionment? Is illusionment a thing? where you kind of like, as you get into something, you're like, this is better than I thought. Yeah, oh my God, it's still better. That's been the process over the course of a couple years for me, like gradually getting closer and closer to now I'm a full-time employee of the club. And still having no like reservations or things that I'm like, you know, wow.
Yeah.
And if you,
for someone who is as opinionated as you are,
right.
And as critical of things as you are,
right.
That's like incredible.
I'm really, you know, I'm not afraid to light things on fire, you know, like that sucks. Fuck that. You know, and I just,
it hasn't happened. Yeah.
You know, there are times where, like where people within the different groups are kind of having at each other and you're like, ooh, how's this going to work out? But it, you know, I haven't had any problems. Now, you know, we're going to open and I'm going to be the manager of a restaurant. So eventually somebody will get drunk and I'll have to kick them out.
And there's going to be drama. Yeah,
exactly. But you know, until that happens, I think it's pretty smooth sailing.
Yeah. No, it's not till you bring people into the equation where it really gets complicated.
Yeah. So, you know, sometime in the middle of October.
Putting kitchen equipment in and cooking food, that's the easy part.
Right. I will say that the meat pies we're producing, the core of our menu is going to be based around pies, which are, you know, for those of you who aren't soccer nerds, that's traditional game day food in England because it's portable.
Yeah.
Kind of looks like a pasty. It's the same sort of bloodline as a pasty, right? The Cornish miners moved over here and made pasties, and that's very similar to the Now, our pasties will be a lot juicier and
better.
A lot less doughy.
Okay.
But we've already made several. They're amazing. And we've got good chefs doing the rollout.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the food is going to be great.
I know a lot of people are asking, is there going to be vegan options?
Absolutely.
Sweet.
In fact, the dough is vegan, which is a big pain in the ass.
Yeah, that that's crazy.
So we don't even have to worry about that. Like, we've
that's
got
nice.
The dough on lock, and that's solid.
So
and the vegan pasty will probably be like mirepoix, potatoes, mushrooms with mushroom gravy.
Nice.
So.
Yeah. Nice and hearty.
Yeah. And they are hearty. You know, it's you're going to get a lot of bang for your buck at the food. The beer will be reasonably priced, like it is at Keyworth. You'll see a lot of our partners. You know, you'll see Stroh's and Axel. And
Fenton. I assumed it, like,
right.
They would all be involved.
Right, yeah, exactly. So the one thing I would say is that those of you who are really super huge mixed drink aficionados, you want some kind of five-step cocktail, we are not doing that.
No mixologists on staff.
Right. If it requires more than, like, putting the alcohol in, put one more thing in.
Whiskey sours.
Sorry, yeah. Whiskey sour, rum and coke. We got you. Really anything else, you know, margarita, I guess maybe because we'll have sour mix on the gun.
Just bloop.
Yeah. But
throw some tequila.
Right. Exactly. Tequila, I guess some triple sec. All right. Two liquors. Fine. But like more than two non-liquor things. No way, dude. We're not making it. Order a beer. Okay. like I said, you know, we're not going to staff for that.
Well, and you got to know your market.
Right.
And the market's going to be cheap beers, good food, game day.
Delicious food, cold beer, six TVs showing whatever soccer you want in the world. And then live soccer on each side that you can go watch. You know, there's going to be tables along the window and you can sit and watch, you know, your friends or your kids.
Playing a rec game.
Right, playing a rec game and then come back up as a team and talk shit to each other. Yeah. Perfect. You know, we got nachos for you. We got chicken wings. You know, let's do this.
Perfect. Right. I think that's exactly what everyone wants,
exactly.
To be honest. So, Sean, thank you for coming. Thank you for willing to be on this podcast.
My standards are very low.
I can't wait to see where this goes and the future of WNGS Radio goes. I'm really looking forward to having more like conversations as opposed to me interviewing you about you.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, that's how the first episode goes, right? It's the pilot,
I guess. Yeah,
got to get the characters development
exactly
in there.
Am I Ross or Rachel? Am I both?
It's all a dream,
exactly.
Actually. So yeah, thanks for coming. We're gonna do another short episode, releasing sometime after this. Gonna kind of recap 2018. People are asking some really interesting questions about your interpretation of like tactics, which okay. I haven't really talked about too much with people, so I'm kind of looking forward to getting into that a little bit. I know it's your
really,
favorite, like your
really
favorite
ready
thing.
To nerd out about that.
So yeah, I'm looking forward. That'll be in the next episode. So yeah, thanks for coming.
Outstanding. Thanks for having me.
As always, fuck Ohio.
Yeah, fuck Ohio.